Welcome everyone to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. We are in paper 47, section 9, which is old single column, page 538. Okay, so we've got the last two sections here in this paper. We've been working our way through the mansion worlds, as those of you who've been attending recently recall. Try to remind ourselves a little bit after this big break here where we were. So remember, one of the main things we've been trying to do is look for what little hints they can give us about a sequence of maturation that's arcing through these seven worlds and your life there. And they can't give us a lot, but they do give us that basic parallel to the stages on a, in a normal world. And when you got to the fifth mansion world, you got to the beginnings of something that in many ways is parallel to the age of light and life. So the fifth, the early stages, and then the sixth mansion world, is moving on past the early stages of light and life. And so, obviously, everything forward is just in some way equivalent to deeper stages of light and life. But, as they pointed out, obviously there's a more immediate relationship to spirit going on when you have a Mirancha body. I mean, spirit is actually, as a sensory phenomenon, an object in the external world, and so the literalness of spirit is present in this process in a way that it isn't, when you have a material identity. But we've got that basic phenomenon, and we are definitely moving more to that spiritual aspect, starting to have a much more definite internal embodiment. You're a long ways away from having a spirit identity when you leave the local universe. Don't confuse that. But it is starting to be something that is taking on the beginnings of directness. If for no other reason, you know that has to be the case, because by the fifth or sixth mansion world, you've probably fused with your thought adjuster. And, the degree to which it's valid to think of a thought adjuster as a spirit, fragment, that obviously indicates some more direct relationship to something that's valid to call spirit. All right, so you're starting to have the ability to have a more definitive internal nature that has not just that material nature coming up literally from the purely material into the material part of Mirancha, but having a significant amount of spirit nature that can combine with that, so that it's possible that you could maybe definitively be called a full-on Mirancha individual now relative to the local universe. All right, so that's kind of what what we're looking at the remaining parts speaking to. Is putting those finishing touches on you as a Mirancha individual, and that being possible because, you're beginning to actually get a little bit more of a direct relationship to spirit energy, and to internalize that. All right, and then the other thing that you'll see as we read this last part that they were just getting us into as we finished off that previous section right there at the very end of section 8. Remember how they started quoting from the book of Revelation. And they had that line coming up through great tribulation. See the quote-unquote there right towards the very end. And I pointed out how they were tweaking that You know, instead of coming out of Great Tribulation, they tweak that to up through so that it more directly matches, you know, what truth you can pull out of what you have there in the book of Revelation. You'll see they're going to do that, continue to do that as we go forward here. Because the Apostle John was given actual visions of the Mansion Worlds in Gerasim via his adjuster, you know, and so despite whatever muddling and augmentation and modification and whatnot there is in the book of Revelation, you have some core things of fact that they can pull out of there, and they're always looking to pull out truth, even if there isn't an immediacy to fact available in the Bible. All right, so let's see what they say here about Final Mansion World.
Section 9, the Seventh Mansion World. The experience on this sphere is the crowning achievement of the immediate post-mortal career. During your sojourn here, you will receive the instruction of many teachers, all of whom will cooperate in the task of preparing you for residence on Gerasim. Any discernible differences between those mortals hailing from the isolated and retarded worlds and those survivors from the more advanced and enlightened spheres are virtually obliterated during the sojourn on the Seventh Mansion World. Here you will be purged of all the remnants of unfortunate heredity, unwholesome environment, and unspiritual planetary tendencies. The last remnants of the quote, mark of the beast, are here eradicated.
Okay, so, you know, quote unquote, out of the book of Revelation there again, you know, and, you know, take all of the dark fairy tale aspect out of the book of Revelation, set that aside. But, you know, when you do that, you know, you could actually go, oh, I never actually thought about that. Animals are called beasts. Yeah, I mean, we maybe don't do that in general now, but we at least will occasionally say beast of burden, say, right? You know, to refer to an animal. You know, and they're just pointing out, you know, set your fairy tales aside where you're thinking of the beast as being some sort of a bizarre, you know, somehow related to Satan sort of thing or something, right? You know, you remember how, you know, they've got all these wild, multi-headed animal concoction things going on there in the book of Revelation. You know, but he's pointing out, no, just think about it. That's what that's about directly. The mark of the animal, the mark of that you're an animal origin being, right? It's very literally true that you're finally going to leave behind the mark of your animal origin nature. And, you know, and they don't waste any time. As soon as you are really definitively leaving behind that animal origin nature, you notice how they pointed out that the ministry, the educational ministry to you is beginning to shift and not be so much just to the immediacy of your state on that world, but really directing you all the more towards what's coming up next. You notice how they pointed out, all of whom cooperate in the task of preparing you for residence on Gerasim. So, you know, not just residence on the Seventh Mansion World, you know, it's about, you know, so, and that's a process that happens a lot as you go forward, where, you know, a given station in your ascension has a lot to do with being a preparatory school for what's next, as opposed to just some kind of, you know, immediate end in itself. All right, so that's that indicates, you know, a sort of a growing velocity, you know, or speed, if you will, of movement, you know, relative to the cosmos, that you have to start, you know, really keeping your eyes set way ahead. You know, if you're driving, you know, 100 miles an hour down the highway, you know, if you're staring at the hood ornament, that's not going to work. You need to have your eyes set, you know, down the road a ways. Right? So you see how that naturally is happening. There's more spirit, so there's more geometric potential in place. The pace can start to pick up. It can start to be less arithmetic, you know, plodding along, one plus one plus one, right? All right, so all of that fits with what you would expect. And so, see, like I said, you know, they can't tell us much directly, so you got to do just what I was doing. Try to resonate with the truth of what they're saying and really kind of get the feel of what's going on, even though, you know, you really don't have any specifics exactly what they're teaching or anything like that, right? Because it's completely beyond our comprehension. All right. You know, and you notice you've got unfortunate heredity, you've got nature, you've got unwholesome environment, you've got nurture. You know, so both nature and nurture, in terms of where you're coming from, are really starting to be, you know, those boat anchors are being sloughed off, and you can really start to be set free to pursue the truth. You know, and it's ever ahead of you, nature. Let's see, anything else there? Yeah, that very first sentence. Just give you a heads up because we'll be seeing this. The experience on this sphere is the crowning achievement of the immediate post-mortal career. I'll bring this out more directly in context as we go forward here a little bit, but just make the point right here. Keep in mind, no matter where you're reading in the book, that when you see the word mortal, you need to think very precisely about how to interpret it. Sometimes it will be indicating, you know, just the nativity sphere life and its mortality. Sometimes it'll be indicating, you know, up until fusion. Sometimes it may be just being used in a generalized sense of, you know, you're in Havona and they're calling you an ascending mortal. Right? I mean, you're not mortal at all, you know, in a literal sense. You're a one-time. Right? So, you know, you have to be on your toes. You can't be simple-minded about interpreting that. And if you are, you're going to get wrapped around the axle time and again in misinterpreting what's being said. Yeah, so just, you know, here you look at it and you go, oh, immediate post-mortal career, this is the crowning achievement. Oh, so they're talking about the whole mansion world post-nativity sphere. They're not just talking about, well, maybe you fused two worlds back and, you know, post that. And I see that obviously doesn't make sense in that context. So just, you know, always be ready to properly contextualize the use of the word mortal, or, you know, in lots of other words too. I bring this up all the time. A lot of times you have a specific and a general sense, and you got to figure out, is this the specific sense or is this the general sense? Okay, all right, let's keep going.
While sojourning on Mansionia number seven. And right by it. Permission is granted to visit transition world number seven, the world of the Universal Father. Here you begin a new and more spiritual worship of the Unseen Father, a habit you will increasingly pursue all the way up through your long ascending career. You find the Father's temple on this world of transitional culture, but you do not see the Father.
Okay, you know, some of the things, you know, and I remember they mentioned when they talked about the seventh primary satellite back in the list of the seven, a few papers back. But they're bringing them back up again. And the biggie there is something we've seen a few times here recently. Where you're going, whoa, here you begin a new and more spiritual worship of the Unseen Father. You know, again, so we've seen several of those where they've said, now for the first time, you're going, whoa, for the first time, you know, the humility that should bring into your consciousness. You know, Jesus might have said he's your spiritual father, and you might accept that wholeheartedly, but you don't know anything about what you're talking about when you say that. You don't know anything of spirit. It's just a word. It's a complete abstraction to you, right? If there's any reality to your spiritual relationship to the spiritual father, it's going to be unconscious. It's going to be way up in the superconsciousness. You know, but we've gotten up there now. What used to be remotely, you know, in the remote regions of the unconscious part of our mindful self is now right there, a very intimate part of our conscious life. And like we were saying, you've got some more definitive spiritual nature. You know, so it isn't just a word, and you can, you know, it's tangible. And so you think about how this might actually get to the Father, what I'm doing, especially if you're trying to go beyond worship, just beyond that resonance with the whole. But if you're actually trying to transmit adoration on that substrate of that you've established through the synchronization of worship, you know, that oration to that adoration, you know, the ability to connect spirit fact to spirit fact to the Father, see, they're saying is much more definitively in play now, you know. And so that's a cool thing to kind of set your sights for, knowing that what you're attempting consciously, you know, could really be in play, as opposed to, well, you know, even though I may have followed prayer up through Thanksgiving to worship quite a long time ago and really left the scaffolding of prayer long behind, you know, I knew that prayer was probably not too likely directly getting connected to the Father. I was of such a limited nature. But I always hoped that at least my worship, you know, somehow in some way, you know, and yeah, in the thin little threads of truth that have always been there, yes, but now to really start to have it in a more factual way. So it's something really to look forward to. That you don't need crutches like imagining that the Father is a burning bush so that it's tangible and you think you can connect to it. You can go to the temple where there's nothing to be seen and yet it feels tangible. It doesn't feel like an empty place. And you're not just pretending that you feel something, right? right? You really do. So you know, just notice that again. You know, it's just really striking, you know, some of these statements that they make in the Mansion Worlds here about for the first time, and you know, here you begin. And let's see. And then you know, they don't mention here, but remember, of course, you've got the 7 sub-satellites around the Father's world, which are being used right now for the detention sphere, so, you know, for the rebels. So that's an interesting little garland around the Father's temple, isn't it? All right, let's see. Everything else there, I think. You noticed how Gene was... You know, was wanting to read Mansion, you know, or you know, whatever, you know, that tricky thing when they throw in Mansonia. You'll actually, you know, remember how we talked about, you know, that idea of them coining that word like that, you know, the IA ending, you know, is making it like the IA ending they use for the local systems, you know, it's the nation suffix, you know, and so there's, you know, giving you this sense that, you know, it's not just the whole local system that's like a nation, but, you know, each of these little worlds is kind of a nation unto itself. And you're going, well, okay, yeah, but why? You'll actually see, you know, later on that there is a passage in the Bible that they're actually, they have in mind with that coinage. That struck me when you were, you know, I should mention that, give you a little thing to look forward here when we get to that quotation. All right.
Now begins the formation of classes for graduation to Jerison. You have gone from world to world as individuals, But now you prepare to depart for Gerizim in groups, although within certain limits, an ascender may elect to tarry on the seventh mansion world for the purpose of enabling a tardy member of his earthly or Mansonia working group to catch up with him.
Okay. Everything's pretty straightforward there. Except for, that very important issue, so that you don't stumble when you get a few papers for hands here and you start talking about the rebellion and how many ascenders were on Gerizim at the time of the rebellion. Remember, that's it's under 200 million, and everyone goes, oh my goodness, that's a tiny number. So apparently only a handful of people ever make it off of their nativity spheres. They go way off on this false tangent of interpretation. You've got to remember, this is a very important statement. You've got mass numbers of people on each of these mansion worlds. Lots of people moving relatively slowly through the conduit here that everyone is flowing through. You take relatively small groups, and one at a time you put them on Gerizim. That small group is there for a relatively short time. Right? So it's like a Venturi effect through there. There's never vast numbers on Gerizim. And it doesn't mean there aren't vast numbers on the mansion worlds. That's a false assumption that people make. It's just these manageable classes. There's only so many material sons and daughters. Remember, we mentioned that a while back. And you have to have a very intimate relationship with those material sons and daughters. You can't have 60 trillion people piling in on the on the mansion on the material son and daughter compound, and just completely not manageable. Right? So there's this manageable size group, that's graduated as a class, and they're just there for a short period of time. It's just the finishing touches relative to all the complex things that are happening on the mansion worlds proper. Okay, so. Keep that in mind, and if someone is stumbling over that, help them to remember this. you can't forget about that little technical detail. All right.
The personnel of the seventh Mansonia assemble on the Sea of Glass to witness your departure for Gerizim with residential status. Hundreds or thousands of times you may have visited Gerizim, but always as a guest. Never before have you proceeded toward the system capital in the company of a group of your fellows who were bidding an eternal farewell to the whole Mansonia career as ascending mortals. You will soon be welcomed on the receiving field of the headquarters world as Gerizim citizens.
Okay, again, fairly straightforward. You could ask yourself, why do they say hundreds or thousands of times? You remember all the variables here. Not only is there the variable of everyone, as they mentioned in the previous paragraph, everyone has their own natural pace moving through the mansion worlds relative to their what phase of supremacy they're actualizing. Just because you're going slower doesn't mean you're slow. Right, it's a very complex system. Some people need to go slow. Some need to go fast because that's what the Supreme needs, not so much them. It's not a race. There's all this variability. Plus, you may be coming from a world where you've made quite a bit of progress on your nativity sphere, and you skip over the first couple mansion worlds, say, or something. Don't look at anyone in the room, but there are worlds where you might actually skip. Right, and so, if you didn't spend, any more than 10 days on the first two mansion worlds, you obviously weren't there for long spans of times where you may have made many visiting trips to Gerizim. So, right, so there's all this variability. But, they do point, it doesn't say tens, You know, so even if you're kind of hop, skipping, and jumping through, you've probably been there hundreds of times as a visitor. And so just, you know, that, and that should, you know, give you a little bit better sense of how, you know, it's not a race, like you're saying. I mean, you know, you've got a very leisurely pace. Your Marantxa body is not falling apart like your material body. You know, where we start to get panicky, and you notice our material body's falling apart, and we try to cram more and more stuff into less and less time, you know, and as we're desperately thinking about death. I say, you don't have any of that, you know, you're just wide open, and if you could go off on long excursions and, you know, tangential tasks and whatnot, you know, what difference does it make? You know, if it takes you several thousand on each years on each Manson world, you know, who cares?
Well, if we're ascending, mm-hmm. it doesn't, with the ability to ascend, isn't there the ability to descend? I mean, it's not like it's a, I mean, in this life, mm-hmm. you can go up, you can also go down.
Right.
I'm assuming it's not going to change. And,
well, right. I mean, we, yeah, but remember, we're at the seventh Manson world now.
Right. Yeah. You're
right.
Not
so, right. So it's gotten much more definitively monotonic now. Right. Yeah. But yeah. Sure. You know, we talked about you could totally descend. You know, on the first or second Manson world, say, you know, and totally go to iniquity. You know, like we said, you know, they don't in general. Bring up that, you know, that's why we stressed it a bit up front, you know, that don't forget until you fuse, you are technically mortal and you could technically go to iniquity. You know, they're just kind of emphasizing, you know, the positive process here. Right? So, yeah. So, but you know, certainly, you know, when by the time you get to third circular sort of level, relatively on the third Manson world, you know, I mean, there's much less tendency for you to be going one step forward and two steps back, and you know, that sort of stuff. Right? You may not be moving fast, but you're moving much more definitively in a positive direction every step you take. You know, you've got more wisdom. You know not to take a step until you're ready to take a step, you know, so you don't take these premature steps and, you know, trip over yourself and fall backwards. And, you know. All right, let's see. Was there anything else there? Maybe just noticing how they really seem to be building up to a crescendo here. You'll see that at the beginning of the next section. The way they're talking about it there at the end, you know, and in the company of a group of your fellows who are bidding, you know, an eternal farewell, you know, it all is very poetic. And as you'll see here at the beginning of the next section, it really is treated as a definite milestone, you know, in the whole process to finally fully leave behind, quote unquote, the mark of the beast.
This isn't a weekend seminar. I mean, this could be 1,000 years or something like that. I mean, this is a long time.
Yeah, on the seventh Manson world, potentially. Yeah. Yeah, you could, yeah. I mean, who knows how long you might be there.
But. And what does it matter?
You know, I mean, I'm thinking, you know, the length of time it may take me on each Manson world, I'm going to want to throw a big party, you know, every time I go from the one to the next. It's like, I finally made it. You know, it'll seem like a miracle. That we, you know, you finally are leaving behind so much that's been plaguing you for so long, you know. All right, let's get the last part there.
You will greatly enjoy your progress through the seven dematerializing worlds. They are really demortalizing spheres. You are mostly human on the first Manson world, just a mortal being minus a material body. A human mind housed in a Marantxa form. A material body of the Marantxa world, but not a mortal house of flesh and blood. You really pass from the mortal state to the immortal status at the time of adjuster fusion, And by the time you have finished the Gerasim career, you will be full-fledged Maronchans.
Okay, so make note of this paragraph too. This is a good reference paragraph where if someone is confused about the use of the word mortal, it places in the book, you can point them to here. See, they've got it very directly stated that you really pass from the mortal state to the immortal status at the time of adjuster fusion. I mean, you can see that indirectly in various places in the book, but here you've got it just very directly stated so that there's no confusion for people. So this is a very good anchor paragraph for that issue. You know, and the other things that they're bringing in here. You know, that on the one hand, you might say it's dematerializing, you know, but, you know, they are really demortalizing spheres. I mean, you know, there's physical energy, material energy in your Maroncha form. So it's not like you're evaporating all that. You know, so maybe not so much dematerializing like they're saying. It is the case that you are increasing the amount of spirit energy in that form. You know, so there's a relative shift. But it's really more fundamentally demortalizing. And the other thing about this paragraph is something to reflect on directly about this issue of the word mortal. When they, kind of like two-thirds of the way through there, when they say, not a mortal house of flesh and blood. Remember that, you know, that there's a dual mortality to you right now. You have a mortal mind, but you also have a mortal body. See, so, oh, yeah, so when they use the word mortal, and you can tell it's just referring to the nativity sphere, I mean, technically, it's referring to the mortality of the body that you have here. Right? A Maroncha body is not mortal. Okay? But it's not a body that's ascending. It's a mindal self that's ascending. Right? So in that more important aspect, you're just as mortal on the first mansion world as you are on your nativity sphere. You know, you have a mortal mindal self. You know, it is not, it hasn't reached that state where it has immortalized itself in its consecration, and that's made fact by the fusion of the soul with the adjuster. Right? So, see, so that's really, you know, is the word mortal referring to the body or the mindal self? And if it's the mindal self, you're mortal until you fuse it to your adjuster. If it's just referring to the fact that your body starts to, you know, the life animation starts to lose its identification with the dead matter, you know, and then when that separates, the body's not animate anymore, you know, and it's dead. Right? That issue is not there with a Maroncha body. And the simplest way to understand that is that, you know, if you think of it as that warp and that woof, that weave of physical energy and spirit energy, that spirit energy is self-animating energy. It doesn't need life animation added to it. So there's no way that the two could separate. Right? It's just inherent. You know, when you go from mansion world to mansion world, like we've talked about, and you quote unquote die, you know, they shut you down and take your Maroncha brain, your soul, out of that Maroncha body, build a new Maroncha body for you, put that Maroncha brain in the next body. You know, that old Maroncha body, I mean, you know, it's not, you know, they don't just set it aside and it just falls apart by the second law of thermodynamics, right? I mean, they've got to take it apart. It doesn't unravel on its own. You know, that's why divine executioners have to unravel, you know, rebel beings and stuff eventually. I mean, those bodies don't, you know, just unravel naturally. It's a paragraph that states some of these things in a very direct way that can help people to, you know, to get an anchor on this so that when they go to other places where it isn't so immediately clear, they can properly interpret. They can, you know, because they're looking for an interpretation that's valid for all paragraphs in the book, not just for that immediate paragraph. Right? You know? And this one makes it so there's no wiggle room, right? I mean, you know, whatever rationalization you come up with, it's got to work for this paragraph. All right. Let's see, anything else there? Oh, yeah, just that last part. So that very last statement. See, that's what we were, like I was saying at the beginning, what we're moving towards. And by the time you have finished the JRSM career, you will be full-fledged Wurundjians. Okay, so there you see it very definitively. We have these three levels in the local universe. The local system levels, individuality. The constellation levels, associativity. The local universe headquarters is unity. Okay? You are fully individuating as a Wurundja being. And that's what they're talking about. You've gotten yourself definitively individuated before you can go and definitively socialize at the constellation level as a Wurundja being. You've got to be individuated. You can't socialize nothing. You have to be a definitive something. Right? So step one is to definitively individuate. You know, and how much a challenge that is to a long-standing mystical sort of notion, you know, that individuality, individuation, matter, what have you, is evil and needs to somehow be moved away from or rejected, you know, that you want to somehow not be such an individuated self. You want to somehow do the drop of the water in the ocean sort of a thing. You want to be seeking some sort of a spiritual bliss state of spreading yourself out into the unity. It's like, no. Right? You're doing exact opposite when you get to the mansion worlds, you know, when you leave this planet. They're trying to get you individuated. You know, and if you've set up an inertia in your life of trying to reject the way God's initiated you, definitively individuated, that's why you're so selfish when you're a little kid and stuff, right? That's not a mistake. That's the way God made you on purpose, because step one is to individuate definitively, right? You need to separate yourself from the whole, right? If you don't eventually fuse with a spirit fragment, right, the whole drop of the water in the ocean thing comes to pass, right? Right? You know, you have to individuate yourself from the Supreme. If you don't, you haven't individuated yourself from the Supreme. You're just, you know, you're just a thick spot in the Supreme, you know, and it just melts back into the whole. Right? You have to take a hold of that initial thickening that was given to you by grace and take it the rest of the way, you know, until you are a separate fact from the Supreme. Okay. So, step one, you're doing that as a Wurundja being. And then you leave the local universe as a definitive initiating spirit individual, you know, and you got to complete that individuality step on the minor sector. And then you do the associativity step as a spirit being, you know, at the major sector level. And then you do the unity step as a spirit being at the super universe headquarters level. You know, you repeat that individuality, associativity, unity as a spirit being.
When you explain that, you know, just the way I dichotomize things naturally. Mm-hmm. It's me against the Supreme, which is seems false.
Right.
Well, because I have to have a relationship to the Supreme. I can't just go out and make myself a reality with no relationship to the Supreme. It would be
right, and that's why
impossible.
Right, the Father is the initiator. And he's the individuality of the parts. But the degree to which you are a separate part, because of the being touched by the Father, you want to consecrate that part to the whole. But then you're going to be more definitively a separate part, and you're going to consecrate to that to the whole. You know, see, the mistake is, you know, if you forget that before you consecrate to the whole, you know, you have to have a separateness, right? I mean, you're establishing a relationship to the Supreme, which means there has to be some genuine separation from the Supreme. So every degree that you separate from the Supreme, you then, the reason for that separation is not an end in itself. It's because there's now a potential for a true relationship, for you to have this relationship to that which is to some degree separate, and there's a superadditive consequence. Then you're sent to a new degree separate, and there's a new potential, so there's a new superadditive consequence, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so, I mean, you know, you need that initiation by the Father, the individuality of the parts, before you start consecrating your mind to the individuality of the whole, the Mother. But, you know, look at where we are here. We're on the seventh mansion world, and we know that most ascenders have already fused. Right? So at this very early stage of your career in the local universe, you are definitively separated from the Supreme in eternity now. If you go to eternity, there's not just, you know, the Supreme Being, you know, with you being, you know, one of the cells within that being, you know, you're a separate being standing next to the Supreme Being in eternity, right, at this point. So that is definitively in place at a very early stage. So no wonder they say up there in paper 117 that for almost your entire local universe career, it's about consecration of your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother. I mean, you have the Father thing done in very short order. You know, and so it takes you the whole rest of the local universe career to realize the superadditive consequences of that potentialized relationship. You know, and you don't sort of repotentialize things until you become a first stage spirit. Then you've got a whole new, you know, parallel thing to go through again of getting a relationship to the Mother at the next higher level. You know, the Mother in the local universe, of course, is the creative Mother Spirit. But then the Mother Deity at the next level is within the reflective Mother Spirits, and you've got to achieve a relationship to that higher level of wholeness. But it just takes a little dose of consecration to the Father. And then it takes a lot of work through a long span of time, you know, across a vast range of space to follow up on what was initiated there. So that's why, you know, take that, downstep that to your life here. You can get yourself in a lot of trouble if you fixate on the consecration of your will to the perfect will of God the Father. If you forget how potent that is, how mustard seed like that is, just takes the tiniest little bit, and then you need to set that whole willing thing aside until you have something worthy to be purposed. You know, you're gonna, if you fixate too much on that up front, you're gonna be purposing things that shouldn't be purposed. Right? It's like no, don't apply will to that. That's called sin, right? That's not goodness, right? When you know you're very ignorant about what is good and bad, be very, very, temperate about this whole, let's get that zeal in there or that will in there with as much zeal as I can muster. You're going to get yourself way ahead of yourself, and things are not going to go well. So a little bit of consecration of will, and then take a deep breath and look for a long span of time where you work on that personal living philosophy, that consecration of your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother, before you think about, you know, potentializing it again. All right. I think we got everything there, didn't we? Yep. All right. Yep. So, like I said, just make a little note. That's a handy little little paragraph. You notice that they set it apart by a large paragraph break, even.
Sure did.
You know, it's a little nugget that they want you to kind of keep in the back of your mind for reference. All right.
Section 10, Gerasim citizenship. The reception of a new class of Mansion World graduates is the signal for all Gerasim to assemble as a committee of welcome. Even the Sparnasia enjoy the arrival of these triumphant ascenders of evolutionary origin, those who have run the planetary race and finished the Mansion World progression. Only the physical controllers and Maruncha power supervisors are absent from these occasions of rejoicing.
Yep, so see, it's
a big deal.
Big deal. The whole town comes out for the hoedown. Now, here's it offers a great little example, that last sentence. Only the physical controllers and the Maruncha power supervisors are absent. Okay, now if you're very simplistic about your reading here, you know, okay, that's it, just those two. No, I mean, you know one other group that's not there.
Fourth group.
The spirit controllers.
Right.
Right? They can't blink either, you know, or all the spirit circuits and whatnot, you know, will fall apart. But remember, they're basically not revealed. They're disclosed in passing a couple times, you know, their existence. You know, there's a whole vast bunch of beings that are related to the details of the physics of spirit substance that they don't talk about in the book. And so, you know, remember when they say things like only that, you know, it's like, well, you know, in the context of what they've revealed, you know, if you've put some other pieces together, you know, it's like, you know, the classic one is when they'll say something very limited about the angels, and you go, well, except also the unrevealed order of angels is also there, and they're not mentioning that, right? I mean, you know that, even though they're not allowed to say that directly, but you can put that together. So, see, again, you know, a machine can't interpret the book. You know, you can't just be robotic in your interpretation. You've got to think about it in a truth fashion. It's not the revelation of facts, it's the revelation of truth, right? The truth is that the beings that can't leave their jobs are not there, right? And that truth is sound in that sentence. Right, there's no error in that sentence. Right, error relates to truth, not fact. Right, so you know, appreciate that. You know, a lot of people will say, "I just found an error in the book." Oh, so you see the truth in distinction from the fact? Huh? The what?
Right.
You've got to know what the word error means first. Right. So just, you know, lots of little examples of that where, you know, they're butting up against the revelatory limitations. I mean, think about, you know, there's more orders of beings that they haven't revealed than there are beings that they've revealed. Right. I mean, how many other beings, you know, probably can't blink, you know, too, that they don't even remotely hint at the existence of?
They crash the party. The party's over.
Right, right. I mean, literally, if the Maruncha power supervisors blink, nobody has a Maruncha body anymore.
Yeah.
Right? Maruncha bodies don't hold themselves together. Those are constructed and maintained by these beings. You know, that's an artificial. It's an art form. You know, and it's a dynamic art form. Right. And all right. So none of them can ever blink. Not for a nanosecond. Right. You know, that's obviously why, you know, some of those beings are not persons, right? They're living machines. They're minded machines. They're incredibly intelligent, right? I mean, they're minded, but they're not. They can, you know, they have a they need to be following the laws of mind energy very precisely as that's engaged to physical energy, for instance. You know, they can't be using free will to insert in the causal sequence of mind energy and altering that, you know. No, this all has to be very definitively causal, you know, what they're up to. It has to follow the laws exactly. You know, you have free will, you know. It's okay for you to alter the causal sequence in your mind energy. It's not necessarily innately positive when you do that, right? Yeah. Every measure of creativity has an equal measure of destructivity potential associated with it. Yeah, but that's genuine creativity, you know, is saying the next state of my and my mind energy system is not going to be what the laws of mind energy would just naturally produce, you know, and it's going to be this. You know, I'm not going to feel sorrow, even though the stimulus would produce that form in my mind. I'm going to choose to have a positive state of mind. Right? You know, you can make that choice. All right. Let's see. I guess yeah. And then, but the, yeah, the big hoopla. So the you know, I think of a big Dr. Seuss hoopla when I read that. You know, all of his, you know, the you know, as he goes through some list of rhyming you know, devices that you hoot and holler and twirl and whatnot, you know, to make the party go. Must be quite a big shindig. All right.
John the Revelator saw a vision of the arrival of a class of advancing mortals from the seventh mansion world to their first heaven, the glories of Gerasim. He recorded, quote, "And I saw, as it were, a sea of glass mingled with fire, and those who had gained the victory over the beast that was originally in them and over the image that persisted through the mansion worlds, and finally over the last mark and trace, standing on the sea of glass, having the harps of God, and singing the song of deliverance from mortal fear and death. Perfected space communication is to be had on all these worlds, and your anywhere reception of such communications is made possible by carrying the, quote, harp of God, unquote, a Marantia contrivance compensating for the inability to directly adjust the immature Marantia sensory mechanism to the reception of space communications."
Okay, we'll get to the parenthetical second. So physics second. Let's just think about how what fun they're having with the Book of Revelation here again. So they're saying, all right. So for instance, that passage that they're quote unquote quoting there, you know, has some truth flowing through it, and you know, and giving you that that clue that what's being referred to there. It's like, well, it says a sea of glass, so I know it's Gerasim. No, you don't. Remember, there's seas of glass on all the mansion worlds except for the first one. Right, but they're telling you that he actually was given a vision of one of these classes graduating, you know, and the whole bit of leaving the animal origin behind so that, you know, in a very definitive way, Gerasim is your first heaven, right? You know, that the only reason that the mansion worlds are there is because you couldn't do all that stuff on your nativity sphere, right? You know, so they're still kind of earth, quote unquote, right? So he saw this class, and, you know, a lot of this is a quote of fact, but, you know, again, remember, the quotes in the book, it doesn't matter where in the book you have quotes, they're not a quote of fact, they're a quote of truth, right? You know, you see that a lot if they say, Jesus said, quote unquote, you go, well, wait a minute, those are words of Paul, you know? Yeah, I mean, remember, they, you know, first of all, Jesus didn't speak English. Right, so you can't be quoting fact like that, you know, in a simple sense. Right, they're always quoting the truth, not the fact. You know, they're told that if they can find a human who strung together a sequence of words that works well in that context, they've got to use that. They have to use another human to give words to Jesus, before they can use any sort of a direct translation of what Jesus said. Right? That's their order. Right? If Gene said it better, Gene needs to be quoted, not Jesus. You know, and so you got to keep that in mind. So, you know, like we were saying, when they quoted and changed, you know, that previous quotation from Revelation at the end of the previous section 8 there, you know, and they changed it from to up through, you know, and if someone is very fact fixated in their relationship to the Bible, and they see a so-called quotation that's been changed like that, that's blasphemy. Right? That's an abomination. You know, who gives you the right to change the words in the Bible? You know, and here they're doing it quite liberally, you can say. I mean, you know, you're reading it, you know whatever the heck it says there. You know it didn't say mansion worlds. Right? You know, yeah, so the middle part there, when they get to, you know, victory over the beast that was originally in them and over the image that persisted through the mansion worlds and finally over the last mark and trace. Okay, that part is, you know, not there very directly at all. They're picking up a couple of words like mark and image and whatnot, and they're just reworking it into a more appropriate sequence of words. You know, but you do have standing on the sea of glass, having the harps of God. That's pretty directly there. You know, and instead of, you know, here they've got and singing the song of deliverance from mortal fear and death, you know, the truth of what's there in that passage, instead of the fact of it, where they're saying they're singing this, you know, the songs of Moses and the Lamb. Right? Capital L, you know, of course, right? Lamb. The Lamb of God. Right, so no, you know, so there's a truth there. They're saying, singing the song of deliverance from mortal fear and death, and leaving behind your animal origin nature, victory over the beast. Yeah, not victory over Lucifer, you know, victory over your animal nature, leaving it behind finally. That's the truth of that passage. But the facts are there. There is a sea of glass, and John saw it, right? You know, to the best that he could, you know, interpret what he was, you know, being given. And then there actually were, quote-unquote, harps of God. Okay, and we've mentioned this a couple times as we've been going through, because we've been talking about, like, remember how you've got on Gerizim, you've got the big amphitheater where you listen to the broadcasts, and we've been talking about this sort of stuff a bit, and we've been wondering how does the harp of God fit into that. Okay, so here's here's the direct, you know, statement that they make about the truth behind the quote-unquote harps of God. So there's a Maranja contrivance. You know, in other words, it's a very sneakily designed instrument that gets around an issue. Using the word contrivance really means that you've got a problem and you found a way to go around it. And because it has the word turn in it, you've gone around it. So some very clever engineers have come up with this device where even though you're pretty immature, you can still tune in. Now notice it's not the broadcasts that, you know, are going on in that amphitheater on Gerizim. And they don't give you any details. There's something that they're calling just space communications. Okay, so you don't know what kind of, you know, what kind of medium is being modulated or whatever. I mean, you don't know any of the details. But, you know, it's something where you're, something is being transmitted across space from point A to point B. And you notice how they pointed out your anywhere reception. So you don't have to be on Gerizim in the amphitheater, see? Right? Talking about something that's being broadcast. See, so it's you know, our immediate context is, you know, is radio broadcast and how it's present everywhere. All we need is a receiver and we can listen to this, you know, radio broadcast. See, that's a space communication, you know, AM radio, say. And so you have a way to tune in on whatever the heck it is that's being broadcast here in this very ubiquitous way. But you don't have the ability to directly tune into it yet. So you need, a helping device. You can indirectly, see when they say inability to directly adjust, you can indirectly adjust through this mechanism, okay? And remember, the one thing that you have to, has to be here to some degree, is communication and stuff is all being done most immediately with mind energy. Like remember the communication lines in the in the universe in general are these mind energy conduits that they lay out, and send communications through, and then are received at those receiving stations on Gerasim, for instance, and then presented in some way. So your first thought is, and all your sensory stuff is more directly mindal. Right? We've talked about that. You're utilizing that more direct relationship of mind to the facts that you need to get from the external world into a representation in your mind that you can then sense, see, smell, taste, whatever. Right? I mean, I'm not actually touching, in the terms of what I'm feeling, this cup when I'm holding it, right? There's a representation that's in my mind that I feel, of that contact between my fingers, and the cup. My fingers don't feel anything, my eyes don't see anything. Right? Only my mind sees and feels, right? There, when I say I'm seeing this cup, I'm not actually seeing the material object, right? I'm seeing a representation in my mind of that, and there's that deep mystery. How did a representation get from the external world into my mind all self? And that's another story. Just remember that, even right now, senses are fundamentally a mindal phenomenon. And there, you don't need some sort of intermediary like an eyeball. But you still need an intermediary like this quote-unquote harp of God, but you see, eventually you won't need even that, right? More and more, you can, if I want to see, remember we talked about that, we're talking about these gigantic constructs, for instance, seat billions of people, and you're thinking, well, if I'm in the nosebleed seats, how can I see what's on the stage, right? Remember, you just put, your awareness over to that location in the mind energy system, which is ubiquitous, and you see it there. You don't need anything transmitted somehow across space, to an eyeball, say, and then translate it into the mind, and then you see it, right? You go to it rather than having to bring some information about the object to you. And so you know that that's basically going on, so you're kind of wondering, it's like, well, are we talking about, there's just the ubiquity of mind energy of some form, and there is a, locally with, you notice it's just, within the context of the local system headquarters, that they're using that as sort of the what's carrying the communication. I'm not sure, right? You just, all you can do is speculate. But anyway, the fact that, the Morantia substance is kind of like mind-made substance, is this artificial substance. When you think about this Morantia contrivance, you see, you are going to be somehow directly engaging it mindily, and then through it, it somehow is like a booster or something, to get you to be able to pick this stuff up. But eventually you won't need that, and you can just pick that up directly. Right, it's like a hearing aid, see, in a sense, see.
Really fancy.
Right.
Yeah. Maturity compensator.
And so, you know, obviously we have more questions than answers here, but one of the questions this kind of brings up is, are these harps of God used outside of this immediate context? You know, they don't say, don't know. I mean, maybe you need them when you're in the amphitheater there on Gerizim listening to broadcasts too. I don't know. They don't say. You know, maybe you even need them, you know, when you're interacting initially some, you know, in the next paper we'll read about how you have interpreters and translators helping you and stuff, but when you're very immature, do you also maybe need this moronic contrivance too in some way? I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say how much you need this thing beyond what they're speaking to immediately here.
Weld it to your pocket.
But right, the fact, you know, you're saying weld it to your pocket. I mean, you're going, okay, now when setting all those details aside, isn't it strange that that was so definitive that even John picked up on that and recorded it? Think about that. Right? I mean, this, you know, this must be something, you know, not at all incidental. You know, if he just gets some sort of flash and with his crude ability to somehow interpret what that adjuster is flashing into his mind and can, you know, has some memory and records in some way what he thought he saw, the quote-unquote harps of God. You know, and this, why did he call them harps, too? See, that makes you wonder. I mean, you got to remember, though, none of us are capable of directly interpreting anything that the adjuster might give to us. We're going to translate it into our worldview.
They didn't have cell phones yet.
Right, but I didn't have a cell phone. But, you know, a harp makes a sound. And we're talking about a communication. So you see, he probably got an impression that there was this device that had something to do with sound, right? You know, and it was, you know, they didn't have a lot of instruments and stuff, you know. I mean, Jesus, you know, didn't play the tuba. He played the harp, right? It was probably just the most immediate, a smallish thing, like the little hand harps that they had. It probably gives you some idea of, you know, what the size of it is relative to your body there. That it's not some great big thing, you know, on a backpack or something, right, or something. It seems to be kind of maybe a handheld sort of a device, so that sort of size.
Maybe the early ones were, but they got them really compact.
Right, there's miniaturization now, these things.
Since they unionized the Maranja, they won't get them anymore.
Anyway, you can just start kind of speculating and running with this stuff, and it's kind of interesting to think about. But it is just, I mean, that's an example of, you know, it's really fun, like when you're reading through the actual Adam and Eve story, and you go, oh, look at that. That actually made it through all those years of oral tradition. That little tidbit actually got recorded in a pretty much undistorted way in the, you know, in Genesis. You know, here's another one. It's like, wow, the fact that that actually got recorded, that it wasn't so inscrutable that, you know, it just completely made no impression at all. Remember what we're talking about. We're talking about, they say, by and large, we can't tell you anything about what happens on these worlds because it's completely beyond your imagination even, let alone your perception. It's beyond your imagination. So the fact that this was tangible enough, see, that he picked it up and translated it in his own mind in some way and recorded it, that's kind of interesting. So the fact that it must be very, very essential. You don't want to leave home without it, right? It's like the impression you get, see? If you forget it, you go back to your apartment and get it before you head out to class or whatever in the morning. Right?
You got to get on the contrivance to get on contrivance.
Right. So, kind of fascinating. All right. Oh, and the one other thing. You know, you might wonder. It's like, well, is it helping me in kind of a horizontal way or a vertical way? And a little hard to say, but my first guess is it the immaturity they're talking about is probably not that you can't get up high enough to plug into something that's sort of at a higher level. Like when we talk about, the secondary midwares couldn't use the Archangel circuit because they can't jump that high. I mean, it's way above their reach. They can't get up to that high of a point to plug into it. Not spatially, obviously, but in terms of their nature. It's like, well, if it was like that, couldn't the secondary midwares build a contrivance to use the Archangel circuit? He said, it probably is not. It's probably not that. It's probably more. It really is at eye level, but you just don't have the sophistication of sensory nature to encompass it. You see, and that's what I also think. They tell you about the amphitheater with the broadcast on Gerasim, that they present it in many different ways, appropriate to different audiences. So that people aren't having to somehow reach up, it really is brought down to their level, But again, see, maybe you need that harp because, it's, you can't, even though it's at your level, you aren't sophisticated enough. I don't know.
Yeah, you're impinged by radio waves, but you can't demodulate anything.
Right. Yeah, I mean, exactly. I got, FM coursing through my brain right now, but I can't tune into it.
Unless your dental work is
just right. Unless your dental work is just right, yeah. all right. Okay, and so besides John, one of the interesting things in the book, they do point out that Paul got was given some flashes from his adjuster too. Not surprisingly, some of those things that Paul recorded relative to that are in the book of Hebrews. There's a reason why the book of Hebrews is amongst the latter books, from Hebrews on. Those books are the ones that Martin Luther thought about not putting into his Bible when he was making the first German Bible, translating the Latin, because he thought all those latter books had issues that, the simple-minded people might stumble over, things like the book of Revelation, for instance, is just too potentially distorted and people going off on tangents and stuff. And, so things like, Hebrews saying Melchizedek didn't have a father or mother, right? Theologians still don't know what to do with that sort of stuff, right? I would love if that book just wasn't in the Bible, so it wasn't part of canon, so that you had to deal with that. But anyway, so a lot of times when they, when they say Paul mentioned something from a vision, don't be surprised if you look up where it is. It's in Hebrews.
Paul also had a view of the ascendant citizen corps of perfecting mortals on Gerasim, for he wrote, "But you have come to Mount Zion, and to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, and to an innumerable company of angels, to the grand assembly of Michael, and to the spirits of just men being made perfect."
Okay, so again, even if you're not familiar with the passage, you go, I'll bet it doesn't say Michael. Right. Yeah, they're reworking that little bit there. There's a bunch of words, and they've just condensed it into that. And also, there's one little tweak. In the Bible, it says, to the spirits of just men made perfect. Well, not quite. Being made perfect, right?
Perfecting.
Right, because you're perfecting,
right?
You're not perfected till you get to the Isle of Paradise, right? So those, little tweaks like that are obvious that they'll make.
But from Paul's perspective, and since this is such a definitive appearing. I mean, top. It probably looked like perfection to him.
Oh yeah. Yeah, right. Remember, your imagination can't even get you to what normal mortals are like on a post-bestowal world. That's completely beyond your wildest imaginations of what perfect looks like. Right, and that's just post-bestowal world. Now we're talking about Gerasim, where you're just, you know, ages beyond that, you know, in development. Right, so yes, it would seem perfect. But, you know, for the fifth epical revelation, you know, they're taking you all the way to paradise and beyond, so yeah, can't say perfect. All right, so, I mean, the really kind of significant thing there is not so much the immediacy of what we're reading about here, you know, but the very fact that they validate certain things that Paul said, you know, as being tied to actual, auto-revelatory input, that he managed to not totally garble, you know, and put something down on a piece of paper that, that they can use without much modification. You know, that's something that humans have never appreciated about Paul, that he was being engaged that definitively like that. All right.
After mortals have attained residence on the system headquarters, no more literal resurrections will be experienced. The Marantia form granted you on departure from the mansion world career is such as will see you through to the end of the local universe experience. Changes will be made from time to time, but you will retain the same form until you bid it farewell, when you emerge as first stage spirits, preparatory for transit to the super universe worlds of ascending culture and spirit training.
Okay, we're going to read about the details of that a little bit more in just a minute here when we get into the beginning of the next paper. But this first sentence here is important to note. No more literal resurrections will be experienced. You can see they're using the word resurrection in that basic sense that we think of it, that, you know, we're talking about rising from the dead, right? That there's some literalness to a death, right? And, you know, so that's an example where you know it's valid to speak of those first transitions from mansion world to mansion world as, I mean, they're effectively a death, right? Because there's a literal resurrection, right? I mean, they are literally, you know, going inanimate. I mean, they're literally taking your brain out of your body, right? Sticking it into another body. I mean, you obviously can't be conscious for all that sort of stuff. I mean, it's a very hard break, right? You know, you're not conscious at all during that process or anything. But the last resurrection hall is on the seventh mansion world, you know? And all of these subsequent significant changes that are made to your Marantia body all the way up to Salvington, they don't have to shut you down to do it, right? So, you know, there isn't a literal turning you back on again, a literal resurrection that follows it. You're conscious, and won't that be interesting? What will that feel like as they significantly rearrange your Marantia energy system while you're conscious of the whole thing? Yeah. That could be a weird feeling, I'm sure. You want to note that there. So, you know, that you don't underplay how dramatic those transitions are from mansion world to mansion world. It's everything that you currently think of death as being, right? But So that you know, you have a new form on Gerasim relative to the seventh mansion rule. See, but that significant change is made without you going inanimate, as it were, and unconscious. Yeah, so you got to interpret that in context. When it says the Maharaja form granted you on departure from the mansion world career is such as will see you through to the end of the local universe experience, don't interpret that simplistically, because like we said, we're about to read that they're going to tell you there's these very definitive, many, many changes, right? It's just that, you know, the truth of that sentence is they don't have to literally give you a new body. They can modify that one body. They may significantly modify it, but they don't have to literally toss that body out and give you a whole new body that has greater variability. That body now has all of the inherent potential to vary, all the variability innate in it, that it can go through radical transformation, you know, and it still hasn't lost its elasticity, as it were, right? It's a very changeable form. And that again reminds you, see, if you're, once you've become definitively Maharajan, like they said, you know, we've talked about how you want to kind of think of Maharaja's substance, you know, in a way is a little bit more liquid-like than solid-like, right? And the, you know, when you think about the difference between solid and liquid, how much more variable the shape of a liquid is than a solid, right? So that really is in play then, once you are on Gerasim from then on. You've got this very this body that can really go with the flow of your mind. If the more significant your mind is, the more immediately that body is manifesting that to the external world in a very fluid way. Yep.
Jeanette has a question. On the level of existence, on this level of existence, our forms determine so much of our experience.
Yeah.
Do you think there is an equality of forms at this Gerasim stage?
Yeah, think about just what I was saying a second ago, how it's, you've kind of turned the tables on this. Right now, your mind has a lot of very distinct limitations because of the body that it's attuned to. It can only vary so far. You know, and on the mansion worlds, that mind matrix that mind is seated on is quite rigid, you know, and is very much like the limitations that you have here. Remember, you've got, you know, you're resurrected as a particular race, you know, in one of those wings, for instance. I mean, you know, so it's now we see that finally you've gotten that turned around, and you know, you've been set free. Your mind is really in the lead, and the body is following. Instead of the mind having to just be limited to what the body allows, right? So this obviously means that there must be some definitive integrity to you, because they're not going to unleash something like that on the universe. And you know, there's a reason why your body limits you right now. That's called grace. Right? You don't want to be unleashed from that boat anchor. You know, we're all way too ignorant to be launching off, you know, untethered. Right? So yeah, to see how that should get you really excited about that. What is it going to be like when, you know, not just your mind is set free by truth, but all of you. It becomes much more of a systemic thing, that you just can holistically go with the flow of the cosmos. All right, let's see. Anything else there? No, I think we got it all there.
Seven times do those mortals who pass through the entire Mansonia career experience the adjustment sleep and the resurrection awakening. But the last resurrection hall, the final awakening chamber, was left behind on the seventh mansion world. no more will a form change necessitate the lapse of consciousness or a break in the continuity of personal memory.
Okay. So this paragraph, see, has that very directly stated, that you left behind the resurrection halls on the seventh mansion world. Yeah, so yeah, remember to come back here if you get confused about that. See, this last little part of this paper has a number of kind of key little statements. Because it's hard to keep all this straight in your head. At least it is for me. It always has been. And so when I finally found these kind of key passages, I really tried to make a note of them. So I could say, how did that work again? So you come back and you get the, you know, get yourself grounded again. See, notice how what they're saying at the end there. Those significant form changes are not so significant that it necessitates the lapse of consciousness or a break of the continuity of personal memory. And notice they say personal memory. Because think about, let's say you fused on the fifth mansion world, okay, and they're still doing this whole giving you new body thing and stuff. I mean, your soul is fused to your thought adjuster, right? So it's not like the thought adjuster can unplug from the soul like it's going to do when you die, right, in this world. The adjuster is obviously very aware of all the details that are going on. If it doesn't leave, and especially if it's literally that intimate, that is fused to the soul, okay, but, it's not a person. And so, isn't that interesting? See, even though you've fused with it, you're thinking that in some sense your personality now encompasses both your Marantia self and the adjuster self, well, yes and no, right? The adjuster is like an infinite rod extending up, right? I mean, you don't encompass the wholeness of that adjuster. So, that little tip of the adjuster that's fused with your soul, you encompass that, and that's kind of you now, but the rest of it is not you. The rest of the adjuster is you, and it's not personal. And so there's memory, but it's not a personal memory during those transitions. Okay, just notice that little detail. Remember when the part of the adjuster that fuses to you is pulled down from the supreme level down into the finite. And so it's that finite tip that you've really kind of taken from the adjuster, in a way, and made it part of your mindal self, and your mindal self is not conscious during those breaks. And yeah. So just think about it. It's a very interesting relationship that's going on between you and the adjuster, subsequent to fusion. It's a lot harder to think about, when the adjuster is really apart from you. I mean, it's, you can think of these two selves and they interact, and it's much more easy to understand, but it gets more complicated when it's fused. You have to think about what's going on. All right.
The mortal personality initiated on the evolutionary worlds and tabernacled in the flesh, indwelt by the mystery monitors and invested by the spirit of truth, is not fully mobilized, realized, and unified until that day when such a Gerasim citizen is given clearance for Edentia and proclaimed a true member of the Marantia Corps of Nebadon, an immortal survivor of adjuster association, a paradise ascender, a personality of Marantia status, and a true child of the Most Highs.
Again, see that. The personality now is finally, in a genuine way manifest. Right? When you finally get definitively individuated and you have this much more direct embodiment of spirit energy, right? Personality, spirit pattern. Right? And so now, finally, see, the Marantia personality, has finally gotten to the point where, you know, it's it's fully mobilized, realized, and unified. But not until that day when you're given clearance for Adentia. I mean, it's not until you finally finish those finishing touches on Gerasim that you're really going to start to manifest as a personality. So again, how does that relate back to this life? How little of my personality is manifesting right now? Is it even measurable by someone besides an archangel? Right? It has to be very, very minute right now. Right? I'm basically just a fancy animal talking to you right now. It's not a lot of me as a person here yet. You really can't see my personality yet. That influence from eternity, you know, that is your personality. You can see my temperament, my influence from time. You can see the boundary conditions of my mindal self that are set up by my genetics. But there's really no conduit yet for my that influence from eternity to manifest out to you, right? Until then, right? So you go to the constellation level as a definitively manifesting personality. So now for the first time, you can have two full-on personalities, and there's that potential for those two personalities to have a super additive consequence, right? That's socialization on the constellation level. That relationship is finally there, right? You know, it isn't just relationships between fancy animals with super additive consequences. It's a relationship between full-on persons and the super additive consequence. Yeah. So again, the humility that this should give you. You know, don't overplay how much of a relationship you've got as a person to a personal father and all this sort of stuff. I mean, you don't need it right now, and you can't manifest it right now. Just be a tadpole, right? You're supposed to be a tadpole now, not a frog. You know, and they're telling you that you aren't really a frog until you leave Gerasim.
Well, and then you're a true child of the Most High, so you're starting out on Adentia as a child again.
Yeah, and to be a child of the Most Highs, right? The Most Highs are the integrity ceiling on the picture, right? So you leave Integris. Right? It doesn't matter if you're one of those that hasn't fused to your Jester yet when you leave Gerasim. You know, maybe you're not going to fuse until on the constellation level or something. You're Integris. Right, you're a child of the Most Highs. You are integrous like them, you know, uncorruptible like them. You know, you're looking down on a Lenanan deck now. Right, they're corruptible. You're not. Right. So again, yeah. That's I think that's a ways away yet until I think I'm that integrous. I could probably be corrupted right now, you know, with a silver-tongued guy like Lucifer, you know, in my face. Yeah. So, all right.
Mortal death is a technique of escape from the material life in the flesh. In the Mansonia experience of progressive life through seven worlds of corrective training and cultural education represents the introduction of mortal survivors to the Marantia career. The transition life, which intervenes between the evolutionary mortal experience and the higher spirit attainment of the ascenders of time, who are destined to achieve the portals of eternity. Sponsored by a brilliant evening star.
Okay, ending with a little bit of a flourish there. But there it is. How objective are you about the death of your flesh? Can you call it a technique? Or do you call it a catastrophe? A cataclysm? An all-consuming fear, right? Can you get to the point where you're doing step one that Jesus told you to do? Fear not. Before you do anything else, Can't do any genuine love and service if you haven't done step one yet. Fear not. You know? And why not start at the apex of fear? Death. Right? Can you just, could you write a sentence like that? Mortal death is a technique of escape.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Can you think about it so dispassionately, right?
Yeah.
Even if you can't think about it dispassionately, it's going to happen to you. So why not work on it? all right. Let's get into the very beginning of this next paper, because it actually ties kind of neatly to what we just read. So, you know, we won't get into all the details about Maurantia power supervisors and stuff like that, but let's start this paper up.
Paper 48, The Maurantia Life. The gods cannot, at least they do not, transform a creature of gross animal nature into a perfected spirit by some mysterious act of creative magic. In the Creator's desire to produce perfect beings, they do so by direct and original creation, but they never undertake to convert animal origin and material creatures into beings of perfection in a single step.
Well, that just blew a whole bunch of theology out of the water. Right, and they didn't, you know, hold back. They just used the word, right? That's magic. You're thinking magic, right? You got to let go of magic, right? Everything is physics, right? There is no magic in the universe. There's very high mysterious physics, but it's all physics. There's not one iota of magic anywhere. It's all physics. Spirit substance has a physics to it. Mind energy has a physics to it. You know, deity substance has a physics to it. Everything has a physics to it. The universe is wholly logical. There's not going to be any fiat intervention of the fiat hand of the Father into your life that's going to magically, you know, perfect you so that you wake up, you know, sitting at his right hand, you know, like many stories go. You know, so again, you know, turn that around. They remind you how limited the Father directly inserts himself into the stream. Very, very, very limited. Of course, that's, you know, humans have always thought that he's micromanaging everything. No, I mean, very, very exceptional that there's any insertion of the Father hand. Why? Because probably an infinite, eternal being is relatively wise and doesn't need to constantly micromanage. He probably thought about all the details before it started, right? Right? Just because you can't think about all the details, an infinite being can. Right. So the fact that he is so limited in his engagement, again, how judiciously should you do that whole consecrating of will thing? No, he doesn't inject, and you shouldn't inject that in, you know, use that very sparingly. A little bit of that goes a long way. Initiate yourself and now take a deep breath, like I said, and set into the long, difficult task of trying to consecrate your mind to the universal harmony, God the Mother. A very, very difficult process. Of a long growth track, like we were reading, going through the mansion worlds, all those worlds to even kind of get the beginnings of that growth embodied in you. Right? There's no amount of squinting and willing that's going to get you to some incredible next state. It doesn't work that way. Right? You can consecrate your will until you're blue in the face, and at best, nothing will happen. At worst, you'll be sending yourself off to iniquity. So just like back off on that, right? Lighten up on the Father thing, right? He's very potent. And so just always be looking for, you know, how it relates back to you.
The Maurantia life, extending as it does over the various stages of the local universe career, is the only possible approach whereby material mortals could attain the threshold of the spirit world. What magic could death, the natural dissolution of the material body, hold that such a simple step should instantly transform the mortal and material mind into an immortal and perfected spirit? Such beliefs are but ignorant superstitions and pleasing fables.
Ouch. again, magic. You know, what magic could death? You know, and remember, we just mentioned that about, you know, that the your body is mortal as well as your mind. See, the natural dissolution of the material body. Right, there's no natural dissolution of a Maranja body. But and this is that's an important line. You hear me use it quite frequently. Ignorant superstitions and pleasing fables. Those are two key elements of any sort of a quasi-religious thing. So the more any ideology goes off, and becomes more and more of a substitute religious sort of a phenomenon, you know, the more it's amped up by the energy of zeal of the sixth adjutant, you know, and made into a quasi-religious phenomenon, the more it will inexorably require for you to be, to feel satisfied in its presence. The more it's required to have ignorant superstitions and pleasing fables. Right? And so science, so-called science, which isn't science anymore, you know, has had to redevelop the ignorant superstitions and pleasing fables, for instance, you know, because it's gone totally away from genuine science and it's just becoming a silly quasi-religious belief system again, like all the other silly quasi-religious belief systems. Right? You know, and as soon as you get your ignorant superstitions and pleasing fables laid out, you know, inexorably your religion, you know, gets all sorts of apocalyptic stories, you know, and everyone knows how science is nothing but apocalyptic stories now, right? I mean, it's just so ridiculous, right? It's just become this ignorant sphere of thought, you know? All right, so, and superstition, you know, means stition, stand, super above, you know, that's the big overarching thing, you know, like the Almighty, you know, and the magical stuff that the Almighty was always doing. So, you know, that's the ignorant superstition.
You hear the term more often, settles science.
Right. I.e. dogma. Right. Right. The only thing that's settled is dogma. Right. Truth is not settled. Truth is ever dynamic and living, right? Right. They're not following truth anymore. They've got just some fact that they've exalted into dogma, you know, that isn't, you can't even question anymore, because why would you question that which is complete and perfect? Right? Right. Again, they magically fiated it into perfection. Right?
Always this Maranja transition intervenes between the mortal estate and the subsequent spirit status of surviving human beings. This intermediate state of universe progress differs markedly in the various local creations, but in intent and purpose they are all quite similar. The arrangement of the mansion and higher Maranja worlds in Nebadon is fairly typical of the Maranja transitions regimes in this part of Orvantan.
So again, a little reminder that what you get in the book in many ways is kind of just a framework, which is, you know, the same basically, you know, from local universe to local universe. But if they could actually give us any of the details, which they can't because it's beyond our imagination, what they would give you about this local universe is, you know, very different from what it is in another local universe. Those things that we can't understand. So that's pretty curious, you know, it really gets you wondering. That should remind you about, you know, back here in the Sixth Mansion world, remember how they told you that you were going to contemplate optional routes to Havona and to select the differential techniques of paradise attainment? You have all of that differential just within your local universe and super universe, and then there's all the other super universes and local universes, right? And there's just all kinds of different paths that one can take. So again, the humility. I mean, you're not experiencing anything that's absolutizable right now, really, right? You know, and our tendency in these ideologies to say, well, this little narrow thing, I mean, that's, you know, we can universalize that. That applies everywhere in infinity. No, you know, it's just one little thread in a giant, complex, infinite picture. Right? You know, and you'll go through this little thread and you'll get to paradise and you are hopelessly incomplete. Remember, they tell you when you get to paradise. You know, and it's going to take you ages to touch all those other threads in all seven super universes, in all the local universes besides yours, in your super universe. And all these different ways that are just completely different than what, you know, you've experienced. And, you know, and until you touch all those threads, you can't come into relationship to the Supreme Being. You aren't complete. You don't encompass supremacy.
This does not include the four outer space levels.
Right, well, of course, yeah, and then all of the stuff that happens beyond the completion of the finite. Yeah.
That's after that.
Right, yeah. Right, which is obviously completely beyond our imagination. But again, just, you know, why do they, you know, why do they juxtapose that with all this talk about magical ideology stuff and absolutizing things? See, it's, you know, you can see what the reminder is, you know, you have an absolute dimension of your personality. Don't use it for every idea that pops up in your head, right? Or you, you know, this tendency that humans have to absolutize everything, right? You have an absolute relationship to the Father. Okay, you've used your absolute dimension, your personality. Now set it aside, right? Right. It's not meant for, you know, cathedrals or cups or, you know, or books or whatnot.
Right. Every time they mention the Father in the context of will, it's a doing description. There's nothing in there that says, be the Father's will. It's always do, which is about the mind.
Yeah. Actually. All right, so just let's get this little bit about Mirantia materials, because like I said, it actually ties into some of the things they were just saying in the previous paper.
Section 1, Mirantia materials. The Mirantia realms are the local universe liaison spheres between the material and spiritual levels of creature existence. This Mirantia life has been known on Urantia since the early days of the Planetary Prince. From time to time, this transition state has been taught to mortals, and the concept, in distorted form, has found a place in present-day religions.
You remember how they mentioned, you know, that, for instance, we've got all these notions of hierarchical heavens and things like that. You know, so we've been told, you know, at times things about the fact that there's a whole hierarchy. You know, we have it, as they're, you know, saying in distorted form, right? But you know, just, you know, we didn't dream up all of that stuff. It's, you know, it's shadows of things we've been told. What?
Purgatory.
Yeah, yeah, purgatory, things like that, right? The way purgatory is has a truth to it in the Mansion Worlds, and yeah, right, yeah, exactly.
The Mirantia spheres are the transition phases of mortal ascension through the progression worlds of the local universe. Only the seven worlds surrounding the Finaliter sphere of the local system are called Mansion Worlds. But all 56 of the system transition abodes, in common with the higher spheres around the constellations and the universe headquarters, are called Mirantia worlds. These creations partake of the physical beauty and the Mirantia grandeur of the local universe headquarters spheres.
Okay, so you can see all, you know, all they're trying to do is, if you know, you haven't, you're still struggling with the cosmology, you know, they're trying to get you to kind of let go of the Mansion Worlds now and think about it in a more complete sense of, you know, how the whole local universe is a Mirantia career domain. It's not all made out of Mirantia substance, right? All the worlds are material, and there's spirit energy everywhere and whatnot, but, you know, they are quote-unquote Mirantia worlds. They're worlds where... relative to the ascension career, you know, you are a Maharaja being. Remember, the fifth epical revelation is, again, just about the ascension career. You know, so if they were telling someone else about one of the other six schemes, they wouldn't necessarily call them Maharaja worlds. Right? But relative to the ascension scheme, that's the truth of those worlds. You know, that for you, ascending through them, they are Maharaja worlds. They're worlds where you're going to have a Maharaja identity. And you're going to be doing the Maharaja things of individuality, associativity, and unity. You know, and then, you know, you could call the worlds you're going to be going to in the super universe proper as spirit worlds. Doesn't mean they're made out of spirit substance, right? But you're doing that as a spirit being. First stage spirit, second stage spirit, etc. Okay.
All of these worlds are architectural spheres, and they have just double the number of elements of the evolved planets. Such made-to-order worlds not only abound in the heavy metals and crystals, having 100 physical elements, but likewise have exactly 100 forms of unique energy organization called Maharaja material. The master physical controllers and the Maharaja power supervisors are able so to modify the revolutions of the primary units of matter, and at the same time so to transform these associations of energy as to create this new substance.
Okay, so, you know, kind of hearkening back to the physics discussion in paper 42, remember how a lot of the details of the atom have to do with the axial revolutions of the ultimatons. You know, that's what they're referring to there, the revolutions of the primary units of matter, you know, plus all the complex energy system beyond that that we talked about, you know, quite a bit. Right, so they're taking a hold of all the details of that atom, and they're modifying it in such a way that spirit energy can be woven into this, combined with this physical energy system, into this art form, into this artificial substance. you know, because, you know, you're starting with the 100 physical elements or material elements and modifying them into 100 Maharaja elements. That's why they coined the term Maharaja for this substance. You know, that term literally means that which is akin to matter. Right? That which is the TIA, the akin to is the ON, and the MOR is matter. In Northern European Andite heritage, right? That's tied to matter. Right? So, you know, that's why they coined that term, because that's how you get this stuff. You know, you start with matter and you modify it. So, the result is akin to the matter. Right? All right. So that's, you know, this is the spot where you kind of see them directly speaking to that fact.
The early Maharaja life in the local systems is very much like that of your present material world, becoming less physical and more truly Maharaja on the constellation study worlds. And as you advance to the Salvington spheres, you increasingly attain spiritual levels.
So again, we're just seeing the individuality, associativity, unity, you know, levels there. And, you know, like in the threefold actuality chart, when you see matter, mind, spirit, right? Individuality, associativity, unity is the philosophic threefoldness that you've got there. Right, so they're just repeating that, and like we said, you know, that the constellation level is truly Maharajal, right? Instead of having matter, mind, spirit, right? You want three substances, and so you have this sort of quote-unquote mind-made substance. You know, just as mind energy is the super-additive consequence of the relationship between physical energy and spirit energy, right? You've got this Maharaja substance that's literally weaving those two energies together. Right? So it's effectively mind-made substance. Not literally, but effectively. And so you see that there.
the Maroochy Power Supervisors are able to effect a union of material and of spiritual energies, thereby organizing a Maroochy form of materialization which is receptive to the superimposition of a controlling spirit. When you traverse the Maroochy life of Nebadon, the same patient and skillful Maroochy Power Supervisors will successively provide you with 570 Maroochy bodies, each one a phase of your progressive transformation. From the time of leaving the material worlds until you are constituted a first stage spirit on Salvington, you will undergo just 570 separate and ascending Maroochy changes. 8 of these occur in the system, 71 in the constellation, and 491 during the sojourn on the spheres of Salvington.
So just that sequence, 8, 71, 491. Notice how it's becoming more and more geometric. You know, we said we were leaving behind that arithmetic sort of progress. You can see it's just, you know, you are changing so radically when you get to the local universe headquarters level. You literally need a different body for not just each primary satellite, but every sub-satellite. So all 491 worlds require a different body for you to be able to properly relate to what's going on there. It's pretty amazing. You know, when you're on the constellation level, you don't have to do it for every sub-satellite, just 70 for the primaries and then one for, you know, the headquarters world, and Adentia in our case. Yep. Oh, yeah. Oh. And then just 8 here. And so, see, you can see here, when you get to this, it's like, oh, I see what I'm, how I'm supposed to think about, you know, what we read back there when they said it, you know, you don't need this. How did they say that? You don't need it changed, you know, once you... the Maroochy form granted you on departure from the mansion world careers, such as will see you through to the end of the local universe experience. Okay, I mean, yeah. You got to combine that sentence with this paragraph. Right? It's not like it doesn't need to be changed. It needs to be changed a lot. Okay, right, so...
Do those changes,
yep,
are they getting finer?
I don't know how we can really say about it. I mean, about the only thing that we can say is, basically what you're doing is you're starting out with a blend of physical and spiritual energy that's initially mostly physical energy and very little spirit energy. And by the last one, it's mostly spirit energy and very little physical energy. The questions of yeah, how coarse or fine are the steps? I don't know. Since we don't know anything about what we're talking about, really, I'm not sure if we... I mean, it's... My first thought would be like I was saying there. I mean, it's... it's not that... most likely, it's not that they need to make tiny little tweaks 491 times. But it's just that you are really... starting to grow exponentially, right? That's the more likely reason, you know, so that, you know, I'm kind of initially assuming the steps are all sort of the same size, but you're just taking more and more steps. That's probably not simplistically the case. I'm sure there's some variation in the step size, but what's the physics of it? I don't know. I think you want to just, you don't want to underestimate just how much growth lies between here and paradise. Right? Like we've talked about, you think this is steep climbing. Wait till you get to Havona, you know, and the baby steps that you take from the seventh circuit through the third circuit. You know, baby steps, I just had personal recognition of the three infinite persons and all this. Oh, wait till you get to the second and the first circuits. You don't even know what vertical looks like till you see the rock wall you got to climb there, right? I mean, you're going from supremacy up to absoluteness. right? I mean, you've got a really steep climb there. You're going super exponential in your curve on those inner two circuits. You have to achieve a relationship to the absolute level in your inner life in order to become a resident of paradise.
Chris,
yeah, you got to.
I was just going to ask a question.
Oh, okay.
I was just going to state that you get the impression that these 570 and so forth changes are a, sort of an automatic thing. You don't grasp that you have to earn every one of those steps.
Right. I mean,
it can be a long time for one person and a day for another, depending on your own effort and.
Absolutely right, and you've got to, you know, there's nothing automatic about it. You have to demonstrate that you've achieved that level. You know, there are quote unquote tests. Your whole universe career is a test. Yeah, we've talked about that.
You can't be on the coattails of someone.
So it's a huge journey. I mean, you know, you don't climb it alone, like in Havana there. I mean, you're climbing up the staircase of God the Sevenfold, but you know, you get to the third circuit, you're at the top of the staircase. And you haven't made it to paradise yet. So now you got to take, you know, you got to start to transcend, you know, some aspects of the sevenfold in order to go beyond that point. I mean, it's a huge task that lies ahead of us, completely beyond our imagination. And what we have to do to get there.
Is it mind control?
It's more and more control of that mindful self. That's what's ascending, a mindful self. Right? And it's gaining more and more capacity. And every time it has more capacity, there's more that has to be controlled. Right? You have to take control of that bigger mind, and then you're given a bigger mind, and you have to take control of it. You know, and it takes. It's like, why do I need a bigger mind? Well, it takes a bigger mind in order to relate to what's, you know, what's on the external world.
Right? And it's reflected in the physical.
Yeah, I mean, right? I mean, the Havana worlds.
No, I mean, your physicality.
Yeah, right, yeah. I mean, your body, is definitely manifesting, you know, because that, you know, you can kind of think of it, you know, the interface between you and the external world, right? You have to be as complex as that external world. Havana worlds are hyper-complex, right? Yeah.
Thousand elements instead of...
Right, it's just, you know, crazy. Yeah, crazy how complex, yeah. All right.
In the days of the mortal flesh, the divine spirit indwells you, almost as a thing apart, in reality an invasion of man by the bestowed spirit of the universal Father. But in the Marantia life, the spirit will become a real part of your personality, and as you successively pass through the 570 progressive transformations, you ascend from the material to the spiritual estate of creature life.
See how they're pointing out how the adjuster is, a thing apart. You know, like we were talking, it's less and less so as you go on. You know, definitely after you fuse. But there's always aspects of the adjuster that are apart. Right? You got an infinite journey to eternity.
Right? It's so like a zipper, and you just got one click.
Right. Yeah. There's endless levels of to ascend. So. Oh yeah.
Seems like we're talking a lot about working pretty hard at progressing. Where does the rewards come in? Like when Jesus was talking about John the Baptist,
mm-hmm.
that after this life he was going to give rewards. So where do these rewards come in through all this talk of progressing?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, think about his immediate quote-unquote reward. He's one of the 420 counselors.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What's a way to think about your reward? Well, you get to Adentia. You're standing side by side with the Most Highs, and they say, well, here's this job I've been doing for billions of years. You're going to do it now. I'm going to do it? Are you sure? Yes, you have the integrity. You get up to a Yuvarsa. You're standing next to God, the Ancients of Days. Right? One of the three Ancients of Days says to you, I have this job that I've always done as God. You're going to do it now. I'm going to do it? But I'm a creature and you're a creator. No, this particular job doesn't require a creator. You can do it. Right? I mean, you know, you start to have incredible responsibility because you can be trusted that incredibly. Right? The rewards are vast. And as a finaliter, you know, you'll have responsibilities that are mind-boggling, right? The rewards, if you will, right, of your labors.
Plus just the, like they keep saying over and over, the reward of really eliminating fear from your life and yeah. really not being stuck to that animalistic yeah. state anymore. Yeah. And just knowing, like, right.
I mean, I was just kind of going with, you know, his immediate thing. But, yeah, I mean, the rewards on the personal level. I mean, it will be so exciting when you actually feel the ability to manifest personally instead of being, you know, sort of barred by your animal nature, you know, walled in like that. I mean, when you can obey absolute law on the Isle of Paradise, it will be so incredibly thrilling. Right. Yeah. Now you can't even remotely obey absolute law. Right.
That's why the worship gets out of hand.
Right. That's why the worship gets out of hand. I mean, it's the coolest thing, you know, you've ever experienced. You know, when you actually have the vastness and the precision to strike step with the absolute law of the aisle. Right. All right. Just this last little bit. A little bit more. And by the way, Paul said some things about this. More from Hebrews.
Paul learned of the existence of the Marantia worlds and of the reality of Marantia materials, for he wrote, "They have in heaven a better and more enduring substance. And these Marantia materials are real, literal, even as in, quote, the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God," unquote. And each of these marvelous spheres is, quote, a better country, that is, a heavenly one.
Okay, see, so just picking out those three little passages out of Hebrews and showing how there's some truth flowing through it. And there, that last one, a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Remember how I said we'd come back to that coinage of, it seems kind of curious, of Mansonia? It almost seems kind of forced. You know, and why is it necessary? Okay, remember the IA suffix is like a nation, like a country. See, that's why they did it. They're leveraging right off of that statement where you think of each of those worlds kind of like a country, like a nation of people that, you know, that live in one country. Mansonia number one, Mansonia number two, country number one, country number two. And there's where you see the inspiration for doing that. You know, they were told to leverage off of human things as much as they could, you know, to make the book as evolutional as possible, have as many on-ramps as possible, you know, where you can say, oh, that's not actually totally new. Paul said that. Okay, that makes me feel more comfortable because I identify with the Bible a lot. I think it's the Word of God or whatever. Right? Okay? They don't force you to have to sever that. But you got to be really thinking to notice it, right? It's not, you know, just plopped into your lap, given to you on a silver spoon. I mean, you got to be thinking to notice, but it's there. Right? See, that's why I said this, you know, ending with Paul like that. See, this first section, see, is really kind of a continuation of what we were just reading. It's just augmenting that. All right, so next time we'll get into a little bit of physics, a Marantia substance with the Marantia power supervisors. You know, and just wrap your mind around the fact that you will be an expert in Marantia physics. All right, let's take a moment here.